Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to the Save the Kids podcast. It's your one-stop shop for raising kids in this tech-heavy world. We bring on professionals and experts to give you all the tools you need to help your kids become fire-breathing warriors that have the strength to break out of the mold society has put them in. At the end of the day, we're all here for one reason: to help save some kids. I'm your host, Nate Webb. Let's get to it. What's up, everybody, and welcome back to the Save the Kids podcast. It's your host, Nate Webb, live in studio Salt Lake City area, and we got a show for you today. As you know, the digital landscape we live in is ever-changing. It's always updating and always progressing, and we always got to be on the lookout for what's coming up. And that's why we make it a point to bring on our friend Chris from Protect Young Eyes onto the podcast every single year so we can stay up to date and help you guys as well. Now, if you guys live under a rock, Protect Young Eyes is a tech education platform that helps us parents have all the up-to-date info on all the games, apps, platforms that are being marketed to our kids. They give presentations all over the nation to help children and parents be confident and safe in this tech-heavy world. They're continually updating their info to help keep us up to date on the latest trends and laws and policies surrounding tech. Chris is the CEO and founder of Protect Young Eyes. He never would have thought when he began his career as an accountant and pastor that he would have ended up deep into the tech industry. But he has been blessed with an unbelievable amount of energy to help save the kids. And that's what we're all about. So thanks for coming back on the show, my friend. Welcome, welcome.
Thank you, Nathan. Wow. Can I get a copy of that? That was fabulous. And I'm sure there's some people going, wait a minute, accountant, pastor, now technology, those three things aren't like the other. What's going on? So, and I ask myself that question all the time myself. So yes.
Yeah. I think it's incredible. Just absolutely incredible. I mean, you started off as an accountant, and then was it accountant slash pastor at the same time?
Well, yes, but not intentionally. So I was at Ernst & Young in business risk for 12 years. If people remember back to Enron and WorldCom and all of those big fraudulent things that happened, my job at EY was to go into businesses and to help them not be the next one of those. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of risk assessment, internal control work, policies and procedures. That's what I did for the last 6 years of my career. But during the last couple of years, while I was still at EY, I started doing some part-time work. You know, my wife and I, ever since we got married, you know, over 20 years ago, we've always worked in our church with students in some capacity, right? Whether middle school, mostly high school. My wife would say she can't stand, you know, middle school isn't her thing. That's more my thing. She's more high school. But we always worked with students. But that then turned into a part-time, paid a little bit, and that then led to a full-time role where I left my career in business in 2009 to go full-time in middle school ministry. And then, like all of us who were in ministry from that time till, you know, I left around 2016, right? We watched humanity put the internet in the pockets of children, right? And that terrified me. As a man who struggled with online addiction of my own, I then couldn't fathom that we were putting that monster, pornography and addiction, in their pockets, right? And weren't a little freaked out about that. And it's taken a long time to really sort of sound the alarm. I mean, back in 2014, 2015, that was a pretty lonely island to be on. Yeah. Back in 2015, all of our talks, we said, parents, wait until at least age 15 to give kids a smartphone and give kids social media. And they looked at us like we were crazy. Like, what do you mean? It's just pictures. Instagram is just pictures. Snapchat's just pictures. What are you talking about? Man. They just completely underappreciated what was out there. And now finally, we have friends on this island, like our friends at Save the Kids. And you know, that was how I intersected with Colin back in 2018. We started working on some laws together, and so it's good, but it's been a really interesting path that I never expected to be on.
Yeah, you're one of the OGs on that island of tech safety and digital safety. Now the island has gotten quite large, it feels like, and it's awesome to see a lot of people. And granted, it feels like some influencers are just saying it for the clout, but I'll take it, you know, any sort of shouting safety, I'll take it. Now, before you landed at Protect Young Eyes and started that, you also worked at Covenant Eyes, didn't you?
I did. In fact,
didn't you use Covenant Eyes software?
Yeah, I mean, I just left my, yeah, I mean, I don't know when people are going to be listening to this, but it's, you know, end of November right now.
Right. And
I just left that job 2 months ago.
Oh, really? So, you've been working concurrently with Covenant Eyes.
Yeah. Protect Young Eyes has been a side hustle from the beginning. Mm-hmm. And has been something I've done mostly on nights and weekends with an awesome team of people working with me. But I have been the digital. I left my role in student ministry to go to Covenant Eyes. I was using the software at the time myself with accountability friends to stay clean online, right? We were helping each other through that. We did that for well over 10 years. And they had a job open up in marketing. And so I went to that job in 2016. So now I'm working full time in a space watching adults and teens and pastors and others struggling against this issue of pornography, and have just watched it grow, right? Pornography has evolved from something that kids used to have to go to, and it's evolved from something that lived in very defined spaces that you either had to have an ID to get into, or you had to buy behind some counter someplace or rent somewhere in a room in the corner. It's now infiltrated the places where kids spend time doing other things, right? Over 40% of kids look at pornography on social media. So this is the evolution of this issue. And we watched that at Covenant Eyes, which, for those who aren't familiar with it, you can go to covenanteyes.com. It's a software that creates accountability with others, because whatever we do in secret is usually harmful to us. And pornography is a issue that thrives on anonymity, accessibility, and affordability, that sinister AAA engine. And, you know, we've watched that now get into the lives of kids in ways that is just so destructive. And so, yeah, I left that role and am now working full time at Protect Young Eyes as of last month.
Holy smokes. I did not know that. Wow.
Yeah.
Look at you. That is fantastic, man. And Protect Young Eyes, y'all have been busy at work. You guys have been part of a piece of federal legislation that you've mentioned a couple times in your stories that you feel actually has a decent shot of getting passed here in the next 6 months. Can you tell us a little bit about that or anything about that? I know a lot of this stuff can be hush hush. But yeah.
Yeah. Well, and this is where, you know, to the average sort of parent who might be listening to this, as soon as you start talking about legislation or what be happening at the state or federal level, it's easy to believe that there's nothing that can be done at your level. And that is absolutely untrue. I think the average American citizen would be blown away at how accessible their representatives and senators are. Any one of you listening to this could get on a plane, could fly to DC, could walk the halls of Dirksen or of the Senate building, you could walk up and down the hallways where our representatives and our senators have offices. You can walk in and say, "Hi, I'm Chris from Michigan. I'm Nathan from Utah. I'm whoever from Florida." And you can walk in and say, "I've got a few things. Is there anybody available who could talk to me?" And somebody from the staff will sit down and talk to you. Like, it's that accessible. And I think people forget that we have that ability, that if you call the offices of your representatives, somebody will pick up the phone. If you leave an email on their website where people can leave messages, they read those messages. So I want to call everybody listening to this to action, to say, if there are parts, themes, features, things related to technology that are things that you want changed, that you feel strongly about, then do something about it. Call somebody about it. Find some information from our website, from other websites, pull it together, send an email, say, "Hey, I've heard about the Earn It Act," or "I've heard about whatever, you know, topic interests you," removing, you know, maybe consent for social media or default safety protections on filters for kids, whatever it might be,
right?
Let your government officials know about these things. And that's a space that we're starting to spend a lot more time in. Now, I'll concede, you know, Nate, the federal government, the federal level is tough right now. Getting anything passed through our House of Representatives right now is extremely difficult. I don't want to say impossible, but whatever it takes to do it is something I don't know how to do right now, right? It's extremely, extremely difficult. We've had plenty of success in the Senate, Judiciary Committee, other places getting things passed there. But the House is a whole separate story. So we've actually pivoted toward a focus on the states. The bill that you referred to is actually a state initiative called the Children's Device Protection Act, which in its simplest is when a device knows it's being activated by a child. And trust me, every device knows the age of the user that's activating it.
Yep.
Then turn on the filter.
Right.
What could be more common sense than that?
Turn on all the safety things.
If you know a child is turning on a device, just like when you know a child is being placed in a car seat, or you know children are using a playground, or you know a child is going to ride a bicycle and you put on a helmet, right? Wherever we know that children are the predominant users of a physical object in the physical world, we almost always default that space or that thing to its safest possible posture. That's the principle. It's simply taking that common sense principle and applying it to digital spaces who already all have filters, who already all have parental controls.
Right.
Simply turn them on by default.
That's so. How does that differ from the Earn It Act from back in 2018-19?
So the Earn It Act is federal legislation that has
a couple of different
objectives, right? It's very narrowly focused on CSAM, child sexual abuse material.
Gotcha.
Number one, it's trying to expand some permissions for NCMEC, the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, to have more resources to do their work, which is a fabulous organization. It's trying to change the wording from child pornography to child sexual abuse material. And it's also, in the words, I'm not going to be super precise here, but the words are, you know, essentially, if an interactive service provider becomes aware of CSAM on its platform, then it must do something.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, it will be subject to criminal and other liabilities. Oh, okay. In other words,
gotcha.
What it's saying is that this, what sometimes is referred to as the immunity shield of Section 230, sometimes those are words that people use, this 27-year-old statement.
This ancient thing.
Ancient thing, right?
From the conception of the internet.
Right, right. The 30 words or 26 words that built the internet. It's essentially reminding all of us that those words were never intended to shield companies who knowingly facilitate child sexual abuse material on their platforms.
Yes.
That was never the intent of Congress.
No.
So at its highest level, the Earn It Act is simply reminding us of Congress's original intent back in 1996.
I get that.
But it's been stalled. The Senate's passed it unanimously out of Judiciary Committee twice, maybe three times now, and it's stalled in the House. The House is simply not getting it done.
Gotcha. I think that's smart to be pivoting towards state legislations because, well, they actually, I mean, states can get crap done on their own level a lot faster than the country can try and get crap done. And we can talk to states one by one by one. There's only 50 of them. I mean, come on.
No problem.
And I do like the idea that, I don't know, setting a bar for tech companies that if you do X, Y, and Z, like setting a bare minimum to do to protect kids so that you are protected. So, you know, you did your due diligence to try and make your place safe enough for kids to play on. If a kid gets hurt on your playground equipment, even though you try to make it safe, then it won't necessarily be on you. But if you didn't even try, it's kind of your fault that they got hurt. So, man, that's awesome. How many states have you gone through with this newest bit?
Well, we have between 5 and 8 that have shown interest. It's modeling itself after. So some have maybe heard the phrase age verification.
Mm-hmm.
So Louisiana last year passed in session last year, passed the nation's first age verification law, saying that pornographic websites, which have a certain amount of explicit content, need to age verify those who are trying to access the website,
right,
just like an ID at a door. And others have now followed suit. You know, Texas was just recently successful in defending their own version of age verification. It was initially had an injunction, but the AG Paxton was successful in getting a stay on that injunction. So now HB 1181 is allowed to continue on. So we're seeing some momentum there at the website level. Mm-hmm. But there are millions of pornographic websites. And getting all of them to comply is difficult. So we would say that the device must do more. Mm-hmm. The doorway should have a lock on it.
Yeah.
Right. So essentially what we've handed children is a home without any locks on it. And we've just said, don't go outside. Good luck. Good luck. Even though what's out there is neurologically intoxicating, which most adults can't put down, right? It's, you know, it really doesn't make a lot of sense the way that we treat children in digital spaces. And right. So, you know, for everybody listening, if you're in a state where you see this pop up, Utah is a great spot, right? South Carolina is a great spot. Florida, Texas, Alabama, other places, right? These are the times where when you see these bills in the news in your state, where you need to be calling your representatives, you need to be calling your senators in order to get it passed out of committee and get it to vote. Because most of the time, that's the holdup, is it never makes it to the governor's desk because somebody in charge of a committee stalls it. Big tech gets their ear and they stall it. The will of the people needs to be heard. And so staying connected to us, staying connected to NACOSI, the National Center on Sexual Exploitation, who partners with me on this through their law center. In fact, I have a phone call right after this podcast with them. We speak regularly. We really do need the help of everyday individuals who are going to be listening to this, because each and every one of you can do something. So that's at that policy level, which, you know, Nate, is one of five different layers that we talk about that are necessary to protect children. Right. That policy layer is so, so critical. So
I love that. And I mean, at the very, very start, guys, your representatives are accessible. They're not hiding in some corner that you can't call and can't access. You can email, you can call, you can make your voice be heard, and it will be heard. That's literally your representative's job, is to make sure the voice of their people is heard. And so go and contact your representatives. If there are things that you aren't liking what's going on in the digital space, go and talk to your representative about it. Contact them, email them, leave a phone message. It's going to be heard. And I love that. Now, in a swing of good news, recently Omegle shut down. You probably know a little bit more about me, about what went into getting them to close their doors. For those who don't know, Omegle is a video chat app where you can literally just chat with strangers. That was their tagline, chat with strangers. And obviously, there was some predatory behavior going on that app because, well, who wants to chat with strangers? Predators. So what went into getting this really dangerous platform to close its doors?
Well, it's Omegle is one of the original sort of viral applications that really had a dangerous side to it. As you said, its tagline says it all. What could possibly go wrong when you're randomly chatting to people all over the world? Now, as much as we should celebrate this, I think what it highlights are problems that have not gone away. There are other chat roulette. That's the category of apps we're talking about here. Chat roulette, right? Think of spinning a roulette wheel. You don't know who you're going to talk to. There are other apps like this out there that are available in the App Store. Yes, they're rated 17 plus, Monkey and Yubo and others that have come and gone, and others that randomly pair you up with people. But they're out there, and they're going to continue to be out there. And so they ultimately shut down because they said it was getting too hard to moderate. That's a short way of saying they knew that they were going to be the subject of litigation at some point, given all that's happening litigiously, be it related to Pornhub with non-consensual sharing or Twitter or others, right? Mm-hmm. it's just a matter of time before they were in the legal crosshairs in a way that they would not be able to, you know, survive. So they wrote, you went to, if you go to their website right now, there's a whole write-up from the founder. It was literally a high school kid who created this app, you know, 10 years ago. And just another example of those layers. I referred to the layers just a little bit ago, right? Multiple layers that should be in place in order to create safer digital spaces for our kids. The bottom layer, which is totally shirking its responsibility, is the technology platforms themselves to self-police. And this is a failure in big tech self-policing, and that's going to continue to happen, which is why we have to rely on policy, which is why we have to rely on schools to remove devices from the day, which I hope we have a chance to talk about, which is why parents, there is no middle school child on earth who should have a smartphone. We have to do our job at home, and we also have to teach kids how to use it well. Those are the five layers. And if that bottom layer is failing, which it often does, then it's on us to do our part in schools, in legislatures, and at homes to make sure we're protecting in the layers we can control.
Man, there's a lot there. Let's unpack this. let's hit up. Okay. As you were speaking, you said, I hope we can talk about that later. And I want to talk about that now. When we were talking about, removing devices from schools? Let's talk about that, because a lot of teachers think that that's something out of their control, when it's probably something that is the most in their control, regardless of school policy, because teachers are the kings and queens of their classrooms. Like, you can make your own tech policy in your classroom, regardless of what your school says, right? Like, that's how 99% of schools that I've seen operate, where regardless of what the school says, teachers can say, hey, in this classroom, no phones, set up, you know, have cubbies for the phones or whatever it be. And they don't have to be there.
That is true. And, you know, I'm talking to a guy, right? You have been in schools, you've been a school employee, and you know these things much better than I do. But my contention is that it is not the responsibility of individual classrooms to police electronic devices. That should not be the responsibility, solely the responsibility of teachers. Because classroom to classroom, then you have variation. You have kids in the hallways who aren't in that classroom who are then using their devices. When you look at the whole of education, which is from door to door in a building, unless there is a policy, a school-wide policy that has been adopted and that is enforced, then it doesn't work. So that's what I'm looking at. I am not aiming for teachers to have more on their plate in being the teacher in the classroom who receives students from the classroom who doesn't have any tech policies, to be the one who then has to convince kids to put it in a cubby, and they're spending 10 minutes collecting phones before they even get to any of the subject matter. To me is not a way to manage devices. Mm-hmm. Every 45 minutes, a different approach to how this technology is used in the pocket of kids. That's just not a recipe for achieving success, educational goals. I don't think teachers should have to bear that burden. I think it's up to the principal and the superintendent to bear that burden, to have communicated to parents clearly what it is, and to enforce the policy, to have consequences, and to have those town hall meetings, to have those policies that parents can see, to have it splashed all over the school website. There is no secret about the fact that this school has decided that in order to achieve its educational goals, which if you're a public school and a superintendent, there is no superintendent in America that can look me in the eye and tell me that he or she is able to achieve the goals that their board has set out for them with smartphones in the pockets of their kids as effectively as they could without them.
Oof.
These are the things that I want leadership to decide, so that teachers are the beneficiaries of that leadership in their classroom. They shouldn't be the ones enforcing. They need to be the ones enforcing it, but only because top down, that tone at the top has already said what it is and what's expected. And they are the beneficiaries of that leadership.
Right. They're not the lone wolves. They're not the only ones trying to do it. It's coming from the top. You know, they have the support. They have the backing. A lot of the people that kids are texting when they're distracted in schools is their mom and dad. And that can be frustrating for the teachers themselves. And a lot of mom and dads think that having I've heard quite often from multiple parents that they feel like their kid is safer at school with that phone in case something might happen. And explain to us how that's a wee bit of a myth.
Well, I don't know about you, Nate, but if there is a danger of any kind in the school, I want my kid focused on one thing: listening to the adults who will help my son or daughter get out alive. Mm-hmm. That's it.
Yep.
There's nothing about an electronic device in the pocket of my child that makes them safer in that situation.
No.
I want them to have situational awareness, focus. We know that that device is not made for focus. Yep. I don't want them to add to parental misinformation. We're now 150 different versions of what is going on is being communicated to 150 different parents. Mm. I have talked to multiple school principals who, in the midst of some crisis at school, spend more stress and mental capital cleaning up the mess of 150 different stories from kids to parents than they did in the crisis itself. I literally just had that conversation with a large public school principal. Right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't want them to give away their location because their notifications are going off on their phone and their room needs to be quiet or whatever it is. I want them to listen to instructions and I want them to get out alive.
Yeah.
When you talk to law enforcement principals, teachers, school safety experts, they all say the same thing, that during a crisis, there's nothing about a device that makes them safer. If I can get really I posted about this recently, and a friend of mine who
get candid
speaks very passionately about this issue. She posted, unpopular opinion, phones. And I have never had a child in a school shooting, nor do I know if any parents from Uvalde are listening to this podcast. Let me say, first off, there is nothing that replaces the loss of a child. Absolutely nothing.
Absolutely not.
And I will also tell you that smartphones did not save one child during that incident.
Yep.
And this is what my friend posted about in comment to my post about the fact that smartphones do not make children safer. And she goes on just to talk about that it's our parental anxiety. And she's right. She and I have a theory about the series of events that started with kids on the side of milk cartons, which really was a small, small group of certain runaway children that then all people who saw those in the 90s now start to believe that all kids have the chance of being kidnapped. Then Columbine, the first school shooting that we watched happen real time, and then 9/11. These three things contribute to what is now an overwhelming sense of parental anxiety that we now displace onto our kids.
Yeah.
And it's unfair to them. And it literally doesn't make any sense to think that they're going to avoid any of those situations because of that phone in their pocket.
Yeah.
So, and to be candid, we got to get past that fear.
We do, because to be candid, it makes it more dangerous for them. The phone in their pocket puts them more at risk when it goes off. If they're taking time to text, if they're not paying attention, if there's an emergency going on in the school and your child has a smartphone in their pocket, they're more likely to be distracted and therefore more likely to be put in harm's way. Like, that phone is not keeping your child safe in any way, shape, or form. It is doing the opposite. The thing that will keep your child safe is what you just said, listening to the adults that are trying to save your child's life. Yeah. And so not having it at school. Oh yeah. Yeah. I feel that big time. Having been at a high school for the last 4 years, it's so prevalent. And then some teachers just lean into it so hard where they create, I mean, there's a lot of different educational tools and platforms that rely on kids having their smartphones in the classroom, you know, the QR codes, the participating on the board and all the different things that are cool, groovy tech tools, but it's leaning into distractions. When we could be leaning away from distractions and helping our kids get a better quality education by not being so distracted all the time. And so Anyway, now that we're heading into the tail of 2023, when this drops, we'll be at the start of 2024. But now they're at the end of, at tail end of 2023. No doubt that there have been some new tech trends and platforms that are gaining popularity. What are some of the trends, the apps, the platforms, the top downloaded apps that are getting big that parents should be aware of?
Well, I think one of the items that I want parents to just be aware of is that there is almost no popular platform out there that doesn't in some way allow its users to interact with other people. And I always want us to be aware of that. The one that right now really has my spidey senses tingling, and it's going to continue into 2024, is Roblox. And you've spoken about this on your Instagram account and other places, right? The problem that parents are often unaware of as it pertains to Roblox is now a gaming application that has been around for quite a few years, right? 6, 7, 8 years now. Therefore, its original elementary school user base of millions and millions of people are no longer elementary schoolers. They're not even middle schoolers. They're now aging high schoolers, which means, and Roblox knows this, they are creating spaces with more mature content. They're actually inviting content creators to create 17 plus content so that they can keep their aging audience entertained. Now, to their credit, they have grown their trust and safety department, and they have gated those 17 plus spaces in Roblox very effectively. I'll give them credit for that, where you have to have a government ID to get past them. That is fabulous, right?
Don't people but the issue is that IDs, like, all the time.
Issue with that is that just means that when you look at the population of people using Roblox, there are older people in the same digital space where there are younger people. Mm-hmm. And that is what is becoming more and more difficult. The same is true with Snapchat, where you have 14 and 40-year-olds all using the same app. So you're trying to cater a digital space to multiple ages and stages of developmental readiness. And that is incredibly difficult. And so a while, right, there was the idea of Instagram for kids, which was an incredibly unpopular, right, for very good reasons idea. But I would argue that there should be an Instagram for young users, maybe 14 to 17, that is different than Instagram that adults use.
Yeah.
Unless you come up with an extremely effective way to age estimate individuals and therefore create a customized space for those individuals based on biometrics, based on other user data, whatever it is. But until those technologies do that thing, they're going to continually struggle with young people and old people coexisting in digital spaces. And that's just a bad recipe for young people. Mm-hmm. And I see that more and more being the trend. I also think we're moving to a spot, Nate, in 2024 and beyond, where in a positive way, we are seeing more and more parents delay the acquisition of technology. And that's a great thing. But what that means is I think we're seeing just a growing chasm in between populations that have said all in and populations that have said no way. And there's not a lot of space in the middle. It's really hard to be in the middle. And so I'm encouraged by the parents who are saying wait. I think that tipping point, that momentum is starting to build. There are more and more, not just faith-based, but just public researched, very educated people that are out there saying, hey, I mean, just 2 days ago from when you and I are having this conversation, another editorial in the Washington Post, literally titled, it's behind a wall, so not everyone will be able to get to it, but it's titled, Schools should ban smartphones. Parents should help. And it's all about this idea of delaying and waiting and moving, you know, to a spot when kids are ready and not assuming that they're ready in elementary school. And so I just think, you know, I think that's going to continue to be the trend. I think we will finally get something passed at the federal level in 2024. We have to. We just have to. So I'm, you know, I'm pointing out both sides of this. I think there's some things to celebrate. I think there's some things that, you know, now that the island of individuals that are advocating is much more populated, which is awesome. You know, we have more voices saying the same things, you know, like Save the Kids and others. That is great. And we've just got, we have to press on the, for as many good things that are happening on the island. I can tell you that the island of opposition is also more populated than ever.
Yep.
It is more funded than ever. It is richer than ever. It is louder than ever. They're always going to have more resources than we are. And so maybe the message for 2024 is grit and perseverance, because I think there's going to be some clashes that are going to be necessary. I think we're finally going to see something hit the Supreme Court. I think, you know, a ruling around default settings for kids. We're stuck right now trying to apply a 2003, 2004 law around age verification, a ruling by the Supreme Court, Ashcroft, that is difficult, and some states apply it, some states don't. It's super inconsistent. So I think finally in 2024, Nate, we're going to have some more of these decisions hitting the Supreme Court so that we can get some more momentum nationally on some of these instead of, I mean, I'll play state to state whack-a-mole as long as I need to, but but we really need some more national initiatives around these things, like the way we've treated cigarettes and other things we've deemed harmful to humans. So
I love it. Oh, I love it. It gives me hope. It really does. It gives me hope. I mean, knowing that there's going to be some clash around it means there's going to be some attention around it. And so that gives me some hope. Man, I always love talking to you, Chris. This is always so uplifting and just so informational, man. I hope all y'all listening go rewind like 18 million times and just hear those tidbits of things that you can do at the home. You know, contacting those people in power, like representatives, principals, you know, administrators, you know, people that can make differences within your communities and within your states. Now, as always, as we close things up, Chris, how can people see what you're going on? Shameless plug time.
Yeah, well, you know, you can visit us at protectyoungeyes.com. We're starting to move more and more people into our private community because it's harder and harder to deal with Instagram and Facebook's changing rules. I'm tired of not being able to say certain things without being penalized. Parents need to know the real truth. And so you can come to the table, which is our point to come together now to have these kinds of hard conversations. It's a private community that we've built. There we have speed learning, these short sessions on deep topics, little mini master classes that parents can attend 30 minutes at a time. We have experts coming in to speak there. That's where people hear things first, right? This article that just dropped from the walls, you know, the Washington Post, you know, the table is the ones that find out about it first. So that's the small group of people that, you know, we're trying to have these just real intense conversations with for people who have big questions and want to ask them safely. So those are a couple of spots where we're trying to take care of people. Follow us on social media, those spaces too. But, you know, we're really just wanting to help as many families kind of day to day. If you're struggling, setting stuff up, questions about routers, how to set up an iPhone, those kinds of things. I got a team of folks that are ready to help. So just let us know.
Yes, they do. And all that will be in the podcast description. They are awesome. Their website, Protect Young Eyes, just is it pye.com or protectyoungeyes.com?
Protectyoungeyes.com.
Protectyoungeyes.com. If you have a platform or app that you are curious if it is safe for kids, they have done a review on it. And it is pretty in-depth, and I'll tell you the pros and cons, and it is fantastic. So go check them out. All that will be in the podcast description as well. And if you want Save the Kids to come speak to your community, there's a speaker request form you can fill out in the podcast description. Remember, guys, it takes a village. We are all here to do one thing, to save the kids. Make sure to go home, give your kids an 8-second hug, and always remember, you were wonderful, you were worthy, and you are worth it. Go home and have a wonderful day. We'll see you on the next one.